Hello and welcome to True Romance. This is your lovely host, Devin Leary, and I'm joined by...
By the devil on your shoulder, Carolina Barlow.
Caroline the Barlow.
Carolina.
Carol, how are you doing? What are your thoughts? What are we thinking?
You know I have so many thoughts, but the number one thought, the number one trending thought in my mind right now will be Demetria's comments about the froyo industry.
Okay, so I'm gonna go into how this came into my life. Remember when Danny Pellegrino was on the podcast and I talked about...
How would I ever forget one of the highlights in our life history?
I know, we'll never forget it, but he and I talked about how when Countess Luann on Real Housewives of New York City had a stand-up show. Like, we talked about that, and Danny commented, that's so sad that this is the nature of being a Housewives fan, that we just breezed past that. Like, we just were like, okay, that's normal. So that's kind of my life as a celeb fan sometimes, a celeb stan sometimes, is that I was in my bed the other night. I see what is objectively an unhinged Instagram story from Demetria Lovato, where she is saying, like, I went to at the Big Chill Yogurt today and their diet messaging was like, they had diet, like pro diet culture messaging and all this stuff, like very aggressive. And she said, hashtag diet culture vultures. She posted a second story along those same lines. I just breezed past it. I was like, okay, like she went to a yogurt shop and now is turning up her millions of fans against them and calling them diet culture vultures. Okay, that's just like something I look at. That's just something I feed my eyes before bed. Go to sleep. Next day, Jesse Konevsky, quarantine correspondent for True Romance Podcast, texts me and she says, are you following the Demi Froyo thing? I think to myself, indeed I saw that, and yet I just accepted it as a part of my reality and didn't think twice about it. You're right, I should look into this. She sends me Leah McSweeney, my favorite current New York housewife, her Instagram story where she's basically saying, like, which I hadn't thought of until she said it, Demi has this huge platform and she's choosing to turn them against a small business because she has an eating disorder and she walked into this yogurt shop and she saw sugar-free options and all this stuff and it triggered her. And I thought that is a really good point. She also said, like, why aren't you going after, like, big corporations? Why aren't you going after the Kardashians? Why aren't you going after the real problems? Instead, you're focusing on a woman-owned small business and a froyo shop. And so that's where I started to get, as Demetria said in her own story, passionate about these issues. She said, you guys know me. She said, y'all know me. You know that I'm feisty and I'm passionate, and that's what happened. So I'm feisty too, and I'm passionate in saying that this was
cuckoo.
This was unhinged, and she should not have done this.
I thought the timing was specifically unhinged, given that cops are murdering people in the street.
Yes.
And the
children.
News.
Yes.
Yes. And the news has reflected that. But in the meantime, the Big Chill is what we're looking at.
In Century City.
We're looking at to defund the Big Chill in Century City.
Ah!
I mean, come
abolish
on,
Demi. Big Chill.
I'll also say, as someone who has also been sent away to Bad Girl Camp for not being able to hold food in her body,
classic.
I was triggered, and that word is what it is. I don't really identify with it, mainly because food was triggering for me.
Yes.
Once in rehab,
yes,
we had to make a collage of like the foods that scared us, and mine was potatoes. So I just made a collage of potatoes and like fried food, because I hated feeling full. So like being full of food made me sick. And so, yeah, walking into places where there was a lot of food made me triggered. So it wasn't even necessarily that. I get it. But at the same time, it just felt so crazy that you're going to sick your millions of fans on this. And I honestly feel that about any sort of pop star who has that big of a following. Like, your fans are so nuts. And I'm not saying all of them. I'm saying there is a faction of your fan base that does send death threats. Like, please be careful who you go after.
Right. I mean, in some ways, Carolina and I can consider ourselves pretty free because we don't have a huge fan base.
We don't know that.
We don't know that any of our followers would death threat people. And so...
But please don't.
In some ways, that must be nice. In other ways, I must say, please, please don't go after our enemies. Don't go after anyone. And I totally agree. Like, it's these... The thing is, so Demi did a apology video that I watched, and she...
I love a bad apology video. The celebrities just don't know how to do them.
I love all apology videos, but she basically said... Okay, so people have I'm really sorry that people have misinterpreted what
exactly.
I said. She's like, of course I wasn't trying to go after a small business. That's categorically
I'm
what
sorry
you were doing.
That one of my fans burnt down the Big Chill and set fire to the Century City Mall. I'm sorry.
It just was weird. Like, she was like, I that's not what I was doing. It's like, but that's categorically what you did. And if anything, yes, why aren't you addressing like Pinkberry or some kind of bigger corporation? Also, she mentioned in the video, she said basically frozen yogurt is a thing for people with eating disorders because it's a diet option. So then why did you go into that store? Like, this is what I'm saying is, she wasn't in a Carvel. She wasn't in a place where you wouldn't expect to see sugar-free vegan options. I would expect to see sugar-free, low sugar, all this stuff options in every Froyo place I've ever been in, because the point of Froyo's invention was literally a healthier option than ice cream. It was invented as a healthier option. Don't go to Sweetgreen if you want In-N-Out. Don't go to Froyo if you want full-fat ice cream and you don't want to be seeing stuff that says low sugar. First of all, second of all, yes, as someone with an eating disorder, I totally agree with you, Carolina, where there's no way for any business to account for the amount of things that could be triggering to me, because
I'd be like, please don't put a bathroom in your restaurant that I could potentially go to mid-meal when I'm socially uncomfortable and ate a lot.
Right.
Please.
Also, as I've said on this podcast, I have been triggered by someone near me who is not myself just saying, I think I'm going to not eat as much dessert anymore. That sent me into a tailspin. I've been triggered by someone saying, are there any cookies left? And that's it. Like, it's can the world?
No, they're not. Why?
can the world account for how many things are going to trigger me? No. So I would never expect a business to be aware. You know, like when I was anorexic, one of my things was that I said I had a gluten intolerance. I really believed I did, but I believed it because I was lying to myself. So if I saw a gluten-free option at a store, I would say that's great because I have relatives with celiac disease who die if they eat gluten, and I'm glad you have that. I wouldn't say, like, why are you triggering my eating disorder? Because the world doesn't revolve around me. Also, if you're going to have a song about how you're a completely different person than the person you used to be who didn't let people eat snacks around you, this is kind of reminding me of that person who doesn't let someone eat snacks around you. If you're not going to let a business have sugar-free options because it affects you a certain way, that's very akin to telling people they can't eat snacks around you. Like, the whole point of recovery is to become one with the people around you, to become a part of the world around you in a way that's helpful and serving them, not to make everyone protect you and create like a bubble for yourself, which seems to be her problem in the first place. It just, the whole thing is really driving me crazy because obviously I try to support her, but I'm just like, this is so self-centered.
Demetria, this is self-centered. Yeah. No, it was a crazy time to post it in general.
Yeah.
It's very self-centered, and I totally agree with you. There are things to go after that are corrosive. The flat tummy tea, the waist trainers. Like, I actually, Jameela Jamil, for all of her own insanity, I thought it was really cool how she went after the Kardashians and they were forced to respond. And I love their response. Kim was like, well, I make like $750K if I post something like that, so why wouldn't I do it?
Right.
It's like, babe. And Jameela was like, you're just giving, like, teenagers are wasting their money on this and you're giving them diarrhea. Like, you're just giving them laxatives.
Right. Well,
anyway,
Jameela sounded in on this, and like Demi was reposting her being like, I love you. I was like, what? But I agree with what they're saying on a grand scheme of things, which is like there is a huge, intense diet culture in the U.S. But I just don't think that this is the way to attack that.
This is also not the problem. The problem is the flat tummy teas, but also like the Victoria's Secret of the world who won't have any disabled models or overweight models. I mean, there's a lot more that's...
And use prison labor.
Well, yeah, that too. But...
Yeah.
I think that she's been on the right side of a lot of things. She posts about trans rights. She posts about Black Lives Matter. She was very active during the election. I just think that
It's Scooter Braun. Let's just say it. It's Scooter Braun. It's got to be him.
We're going to blame this all on Scooter Braun. No, I was actually imagining Scooter in a tailspin yesterday being like, we've got a bad PR situation. Everyone's mad at Demi because she is trying to attack a yogurt shop. But yeah, I thought the same thing when Taylor Swift posted about that TV show Ginny and Georgia.
Right.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
So this Netflix TV show Ginny and Georgia, which I guess is very popular, had some bad joke in it. And I say bad meaning the joke wasn't funny, where they said, someone said, you go through guys faster than Taylor Swift. And Taylor makes a post about it being like, come on, Ginny and Georgia, do better. This is, it's 2021. What a sexist joke. If it were me, I would have been like, this joke sucks.
Yeah.
It's not funny. You can make fun of me all of you want. I'm a billionaire. But she makes fun of them. And then, yeah, this faction of fans she has attacks this writer. This writer got
death threats.
Death threats. She had to move. She got doxxed. Her address was leaked. She had to move houses. Come on, people.
It's just, again, when people are involved in a Nazi movement, like there, you probably have neighbors who are involved in some sort of Nazi movement. Like that is a possibility.
I do.
I mean, maybe not in LA, but like that's a possibility for a lot of people. So maybe focus on that and not writers for Ginny and Georgia and
exactly
and culinary workers, people working in a yogurt shop. Like,
I mean, come on. Yeah. Focus on bigger businesses. Jesus Christ.
Yes. But that being said, that's not what we're here to talk about this episode.
We were taken up in the moment. We wanted to talk today about parenting and relationships. Devin and I are both obsessed with babies. Devin, when I met you, you didn't want to have kids.
No, I used to hate the idea of kids. I used to, and still often, like, don't know how to talk to them or interact with them. So that's something that really, like, one
Devin
time...
Devin once told me that, you know how when everyone, like, for me, I don't like cats that much. So when someone shows me their cat, I usually pretend I'm seeing a dog. And I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. And Devin once told me, she was like, I don't know what to do when I see a baby, so I imitate all the people around me. We're like, yes, let's touch the baby.
I also, one time, I was with the family of a guy that I was dating, and I was with his sister-in-law and her two young children, and the little girl, so this is like a family member that I'm like trying to impress because they're related to my boyfriend at the time. So the little girl is like, sing a song for me to me. And I was like, okay, like in no world am I going to sing a song in front of this person I just met. I know I sing on this podcast for a lot of people I don't meet, but like this was a moment where it would have been really weird for me to like just start singing. So I just like laughed and was like, oh, haha, okay. And then she said it again. She's like, wait, please sing, please. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know. Like, okay. And then the sister-in-law was like, sorry. She just like really likes to, she really likes when people sing. And I was like, wait.
And you were like, well, I don't want to sing.
I kind of said that. I was like, oh, well, haha. Anyway, that's okay. Like, I just tried to change the subject. And it was really awkward because I was like, I'm not going to sing. This is so weird. So those were a lot of my experiences early on. But then somehow a few years ago, I biologically, something just set in and suddenly yeah. I was like, oh, I need that.
I know. Yeah, I think it was about, listen, I've always wanted children. I love babies. That being said, I always thought I was going to adopt. I never wanted to have kids, mainly because like Demetria, I'm easily triggered around things with bodies. I didn't want to gain the weight. I was freaked out about that. You know, I'm negotiating even if I'm going to have a birthday cake tomorrow, which is my birthday, which we're not talking about because we're talking about other things. But that is a big deal.
Carol, you know, no more melon cakes on birthdays, right?
That's true. But I never wanted to get pregnant because it just stressed me out, like being out of control of my body. Anyway, then I turned 29. I think it was turning around the age where my body was like, okay, you're going to be late soon. You better like get fucking pregnant. And there's like an alarm sounding off. I want to get knocked up. I don't even know what it is. But yeah, I at the same time, I am one of the more high maintenance people I know. An ex-boyfriend once told me, like, you think you're really low maintenance, but you're actually really high maintenance, which is a line from When Harry Met Sally and is absolutely true for me. Like, I dress like whatever. I'll say like, I'll eat whatever when I obviously won't. And I need my 9 to 10 hours of sleep. So when I'm babysitting, I'm always like, oh my God, we're having so much fun. This is the best. And then 5 hours in, I'm like, wait, I haven't even started my day yet. Like, I need to be on the computer doing nothing for 2 hours.
Yeah, I also think, like, I don't hold it against anyone as someone who has had a dog that I can't stop spamming the internet with photos of. I do think the baby culture on Instagram is oppressive. Like, it's like people constantly posting pictures of their baby and posting, like, every person who gets pregnant posted. And it's like, I do think that that, like, makes us all think, like, we should be doing that. What's wrong with me if I'm not doing that? And I can't imagine how hard that is for people who are actually, like, trying and struggling to get pregnant and have fertility problems, which is a lot of people. Like, it just must be so hard to constantly be berated with, like, 4 months today, he said exactly. Mama today. Like, not that I blame people for posting that, but it just, I do think it creates this thing of like, wait, what am I doing with my life?
I think that a lot about Instagram in general. Like, Stephanie Allen, who's a comic, posted on Mother's Day, like, abolish Mother and Father's Day. And someone was like, why would you? And she was basically saying, like, there's just so many people who have pain around this area of their life. Like, yes. Why do we need to post about it?
Yeah.
And it is so true. Like, I post about my mom and dad every Father's Day, every Mother's Day. But a part of me is always like, why? My mom knows how much I love her. I get these sort of like sending flowers to your mom publicly. I get it. But for so many people, it's a sensitive area. So it's like, I don't know. It's just weird to me.
Instagram is weird.
But that being said, I'm sure when I have a baby, I'll be posting it in like every single different outfit I can find and be dressing it up like a sailor and all of those things.
And that being said, like, I do love to see people's babies sometimes. And like, it's similar to how I said I love looking at croissants. Like, it's like the inside of a croissant is something I love to see on Instagram. And a baby trying to say something is something I love to see on Instagram.
Yeah. Love that. Love a baby laughing.
Oh, I mean, laughing.
I just have, it's very instinctual. Like, I love the idea of just walking with a stroller. I want to cradle a big fat stomach. I want to go shopping for baby things. Whenever a friend has a baby, I go ham with the gifts. Even if we're not even that close. I just like shopping for baby stuff because it's so much fun.
Okay, you just set yourself up, though, because if you have any friends who are having a baby, now you have to get them crazy gifts. Yeah, so today we're going to talk about parenting. I also think that parenting is interesting because it does have such an intense effect on your your parents' relationship has such an effect on your relationship dating life.
I always think about Linda McCartney and Paul McCartney. Linda McCartney, if you don't know, is this incredible photographer. Actually, the first time I ever saw her stuff was at Devin's house. Devin had a book of Linda McCartney photography.
Yeah, guys. Yeah, that's the type of stuff.
Yeah, I guess I'm sort of an arts person. I don't even think Devin knew she had it.
That's really the type of thing. If you're in my home, that's really the type of thing you're going to come across. So
again, I found it. I don't think Devin knew she had it. a boyfriend got it for me later because I talked about it so much. But Linda McCartney and Paul McCartney met. After they met, they fell in love and they spent every day together since. And if you look at her photography, I really love it because I think it speaks to the fact that homemaking is an art. Building a family and building a home is a creative pursuit. And a lot of her pictures were of Paul and the kids on this farm. It's really idyllic. And, you know, I always feel bad for Stella McCartney, or I feel for her because so much of her work reflects her mother. You know, she built this cruelty-free clothing line. Because her mother was such an animal person. A lot of her stuff has horses on it because her mother loved horses. In any case, I do want a love like that where you meet someone and think, I need to be with you all the time.
Yeah.
Is that codependent? Sure. But guys, don't come running, okay? I need some time to work on myself.
Guys, give her some time to sort through the DMs.
I need breathing room.
She has so many DMs already that she has to sort through. So just give her some time to sort through those. And then, no, just kidding. You should fill Carolina's DMs.
No.
Okay, sorry. No.
No.
No. Okay.
I'm really excited that we talked to a man on this, mainly because I feel like people assume men like this don't exist, and it what leads a lot of women to settling with men who aren't that interested in parenting.
Yes, I agree that Devin, this our guest is named Devin as well. Okay, guys.
That was controversial, and we didn't know if we could handle it, but crazy. It turned out we could.
But I think he is definitely like one of those men that you're like, will you exist?
The what?
Awooga. No. But he's the best and has such great insights. And I'm really excited for you to for you guys to hear this. This episode really helped me the day that I listened to it. It helped me really like get through some stuff that I was personally.
Devin had diarrhea. We will be right back. I want true romance.
Welcome back to True Romance. Today we have a very exciting guest. He is a friend of mine whose bio is so insane that I can't believe that I treated him like a normal human being. He is a writer and producer and comedian. He currently works as a staff writer on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. Ever heard of it? Where his writing has earned an NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Writing in a Comedy Series, 2 WGA Award nominations, and an Emmy nomination. Yes, I said Emmy nomination for Outstanding Writing for a Variety Series. He is also an author of the New York Times bestselling book, The Daily Show with Trevor Noah Presents, The Donald J. Trump Presidential Twitter Library, which that book happens to be hanging up on the wall behind me, not to brag. Okay? Based on the... Oh, I don't need that part. Previous credits he's also worked on are the Grammys, Desi Lydic Abroad, Remembering RGB and Nation Ugly Cries,
RBG. Jordan Club. Come on, Devin.
What? Oh, did I say RGB?
Yeah, obviously you don't even remember her.
Okay, Notorious B.I.G. and Nation Ugly Cries. no, Remembering RBG, A Nation Ugly Cries. Jordan Klepper fingers the pulse into the MAGA verse. Got that one right because I'm misogynist. And many more. Please welcome Devin Delaquanti.
Devin Delaquanti.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Carolina, you missed the key.
Okay, I want to explain why.
Okay.
I get really anxious with long last names that I'm going to mispronounce them. So I was right when I realized
you had to listen to the pronunciation.
Yeah, right when I realized.
I like that you just mispronounced the word mispronounced too. It was very meta, and I appreciate meta humor.
How do you
on
say
a deep
cucumber?
Level.
Thank you so much for being with us.
What is Delaquanti? Is that Italian?
It's Italian. It's I think they at Ellis Island they changed the G to a Q for some reason.
Well, not for some reason. They look exactly like each other.
Yeah, that's true. And then
they had dyslexia.
So it was yeah, they thought it was they just mispronounced it, but on paper is what it what that was. Delaquanti in Italian, Delaguandi in Italian means of the gloves. So the
wow.
theory is that my ancestors were glove makers or pickpockets.
Okay.
Because people
ooh,
who would have pickpockets
fancy.
Would do it. So I come from a long line of criminals.
Wow. My ancestors also dropped the O apostrophe at Ellis Island.
It was O'Leary?
It was O'Leary. And my relatives in Ireland are still O'Leary. And often they will ask us to go back to O'Leary. But it's like... Listen, my podcast has 900 something followers on Instagram. Like, if I throw them a name change, they're just going to be confused, and I can't have that. So
you're in way too deep.
I'm in way too deep in the yeah. fame game.
And D-O-Lirious doesn't work
right.
as
my
well.
My Twitter
as a
handle
pun.
Would never make sense again. It's just
yeah, exactly.
My ancestors don't get this.
I'm jealous because I want a WGA nomination.
Okay, it's not about you, Carolina.
No, it is everyone's. Every accomplishment I see outside of myself is eventually about me. And it's also about it's making fun of me.
True.
No, I did not. That was not my purpose.
No,
it was not my purpose, that, even the slightest.
Well, that's what happened.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Explain yourself.
I need a more humble bio to send that's less, you know, a pain to other people. And when I sent the bio, it felt very fancy because half of the stuff I was just like, oh, yeah, I guess that happened. I guess that's a ceremony I sat at and ate. A chicken breast and then lost an award to Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, which is sort of how it generally goes.
So you and Devin know each other from The Daily Show. You famously stole Devin's name. Devin, how long did it take you to recover from this?
Wait, which Devin are you asking is the question? Is my question on that.
Now I'm
stealing names, stealing pickle. Questions.
I'm going to ask both Devins how it felt to know there was a thief in your midst.
Okay.
Female Devin, you go first.
Wait, what?
You go first.
Okay. Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to talk over a woman yet again.
Don't make this like a whole thing.
Wait, what do you mean?
Like, give it to us straight. Don't start with the day you were born or start at the Daily Show.
Okay. So I started as an intern at the Daily Show. Here I am. I'm from Connecticut. I have no idea what this Hollywood
exactly
life is going to be like.
Exactly what I was worried about.
And so my first day, okay, so started probably around 8:50 a.m.
Oh, here we go.
No, I don't know. I think that in the beginning, it was fine. It was only when we were in the same department.
I thought it was going to be fine.
I thought it was going to be fine. I was like, I'm adaptable. Like, I'm actually like a really agreeable person. And of course, I can make room for another white man. Yeah, of course. Of course.
I've been doing that my whole life.
I've been making myself smaller as a woman my whole life. And I've been giving up the space that is mine to take.
What's one more name?
If I remember correctly, the first day I was there, you walked up to me and said, your name's Devin too, and that's okay.
Wait, okay.
And now I'm wondering, is that true?
Okay, yes, because you don't have to be, sometimes you have to choose your moments to not say how you're really feeling, especially as a woman. Again, it's like, of course I would be honest if I had the privilege.
When really she just wanted to scream and pull her hair out.
Here's the thing from my perspective. That I came in and I will cede to you. You were there first, so you yes. have Prima Devin, I guess, in the Daily Show. But the problem is the Daily Show, it wouldn't have been an issue even a little bit if we didn't have a very old school paging system.
Yes.
So if you needed to get in touch with somebody, it would be like, Devin, please call 1784. Devin, 1784. And I learned within maybe 2 days that no one ever wants to talk to me. Everyone only wanted to talk to Devin Leary. And so I would just be calling people and I would be able to recognize people's voices. Like, Devin, call Brittany. I'm like, nope, doesn't want to talk to me. Or like, yeah. Devin, call Jesse. I'm like, no, that's not. So I just started assuming that it was never for me. Yeah. Except when we would get called into like the executive conference room or something like that. And then yes. It was like a crapshoot. Like, who could it be?
I know. I was terrified of accidentally calling the executive conference room when the page was not for me. And then being like, okay, actually burn yourself because this is not.
You thought that we called you? It's the executive conference room, Devin.
But wait.
You think we needed some coffee?
Did you ever think that, so then our IT guy is named Dennis, so I also thought often that Dennis's pages were for me. Did you have that problem?
I did not have that problem because I thought none of the Devin pages were for me. So right. If I was ignoring the Devins, I could ignore the Dennis's just as easily, even if they were confusing. That was just my baseline as it was. So.
Oh, the struggles.
Really, your beef is with Dennis. Your beef is not with me.
My beef is with the gods of name. And yeah, I'm going to take it up with them because, first of all, it's like, what is God? Like, if God is there, why hasn't he responded to the prayers of people who really need it?
The pages of the people.
Yeah. Also, what if he was one of us? You ever think about that? Come on.
What if he was Ace Ventura?
Well, he would talk to animals, which is, it seems right. As like,
true. Oh,
what day was that in the Bible?
I literally meant to say Jim Carrey, and I said Ace Ventura. I meant to say Jim Carrey like Bruce Almighty. And then I was like, wait, talk to animals. What the hell is he talking about? And then I was like, wait, did I just say Ace Ventura? Anyway.
Devin, you are.
Here I go again.
You have a wife, period.
It's true.
And Devin has told me that you are really happy together. At least on the outside, that's how it appears.
I have said that it seems like goals from the outside.
That's good. It seems like goals from the inside. I think any marriage should be. It's been really good. I think a pandemic year will certainly just figure out, you know, you're stuck being together. And there are times where when we're reopening, we're like, well, what are we even going to do? Like we're not really going to change. Maybe we'll see more of our friends, but it's not like we don't want to go have like nights alone or anything like that. We're just totally like happy being around each other all the time. And I feel like we're able to communicate in a way that's very easy and open. And also, like, we've been together for so long. We've been together since 2008, which is now going on, like, 12, going on 13 years.
So you clung together during the recession.
Yes, Exactly, you know. So we've been through crisis. We weathered the housing crisis. We weathered the Bernie Madoff scandal, RIP, you know.
The Wizard of Lies? If you can get through the Wizard of Lies, you can get through anything.
I know. With Robert De Niro and Alessandro Nivola. Riveting. But yeah, no, we've just certainly, like, we have that communication. My favorite example of that is you just have to, like, speak your partner. You need to understand, like, what they're trying to say and sort of, like, how they see things and what their emotional life is versus what your emotional life is and how you navigate those things. Mm-hmm. And we're very compatible in that way. But the example I give is when she was pregnant, the first trimester was, like, really rough and she was, like, nauseous a lot of the time and not feeling well. And so when I was in the house at one point, I was just dancing around and being an idiot and stupid, as I am wont to do. And I was dancing to some stupid song. And she, her stomach was not reacting well to me dancing and shaking things around.
She was not feeling good.
She
was sincerely saying, like, you make me want to throw up right now.
Literally what she said is, the words she said to me were, I want to throw up just looking at you.
Wow.
To which I replied, what? And so she was like, no, I'm not feeling well. I'm like, no, I know. Like, I knew what she was saying. I knew she wasn't saying that the sight of you makes me sick. Like,
That's so funny.
That's like the perfect example. Is like, I knew she wouldn't say that to me because that's not how she feels. And even if it is how she felt at that moment, I'm like, no, she doesn't mean that. So it's one of those communication things where I'm like, I speak my wife's language and I understand what she was trying to say to me, as opposed to the words she actually said, which were, I want to throw up just looking at you. Which is like a Harold Pinter kind of like a line you'd hear in a play like Betrayal in like the final scene with like someone holding a tiny gun at them or something like that. But no.
It's so funny. It's kind of the thing where women always say that they hate when the guy says, you know, we're pregnant, because obviously the woman's carrying the child. But there is something egregious about, I'm sure, being so nauseous and then seeing your happy husband dancing around the kitchen. Basically, I'm saying you were in the wrong and I want to throw up just thinking about
it. Thinking about what you did.
No, that's fair. That's fine.
What is your wife's name?
Jen.
Jen. And how did you and Jen meet?
We met at the accounting firm where I worked back in from like 2006 until 2010. And we were friends first for a while. And then we were both in other relationships that clearly weren't working out. And then eventually those ended and we kind of found our way to each other. And it's been great. Like it was fun at the beginning, obviously, like having to figure out like, well, we're colleagues, but we were kind of like in the same department, but not, there was no like power or anything. We were just both kind of like underlings at an accounting firm. And we both worked in sort of like the administrative side of it all. We don't ask us about numbers.
And this was at the Madoff company, right?
Yes. No, we were cooking the books for Bernie and we found love, you know, some people found a fortune. Other people found love.
That's awesome. I'm really glad that you guys didn't get like incriminated at all.
No, the indictments are still sealed, but you know, no, it was great. We worked at one of the big accounting firms together and it was cool. Like there were other couples. It was like one of those places that's big enough that you had like there's couples just in and around and a lot of married couples now, people who have kids and everything. And so, yeah, it worked out great. And then eventually I left like 2 years later to go work at the Onion and she stayed and is still there and like and it's a cool place to work and she enjoys it and stuff, but yeah, I found a wife there and then off I went.
And what was your relationship history like before you met her and sort of what was different about Jen?
And you don't have to answer this stuff if it's too personal, by the way.
No, Devin,
I just,
he does.
No, I get excited because whenever I interview someone that I'm friends with who I like don't really know their relationship history, I get excited because I'm like, okay, now I have a reason to ask all this
stuff. I feel like I had a long string of girlfriends from pretty much like the end of high school until I got married. It was sort of like, I guess like serial monogamist is the term, but I was in a long relationship in college and then that ended. And then it was sort of like I met somebody and then that started up and then we were together for a long period of time again and then that ended and then I met my wife and then we kind of went from there. But I did not ever really have like long periods of dating once I was out of high school. Like I had like one or two relationships in high school and then bounced around. Like, you know, it was just sort of generally single. But once I moved to New York, it's just been sort of like I've been in a relationship most of the time. I feel like it's just kind of my natural state. Like some people operate that way and I'm one of those people. But then when I met my wife, the thing that was so great, she very much pursued me. I kind of was, you know, oblivious to anything and everything. But she was like, do you want to hang out? Let's hang out. Like she was very much like back in the early days when I was doing a lot of stand up at like terrible, you know, bar show, open mic type thing. She like wanted to come out and hang out. And anybody
love.
Who anyone who goes to an open mic loves you just. And if they still want to talk to you afterwards, then they definitely love you and you should marry them. And so here we are. That's sort of how it all happened. And then, you know, we obviously like I have had the career that I've had now, but like I was just some dude sitting at a cubicle who she was like, you know, enjoyed being around and I enjoyed being around her. And, you know, we had no idea that my career path would take me like where it has. And so it's been really fun to kind of be on that ride together. I think that she's, it was something that it's also a nice thing about being together and being together a long time before we got married. Like all that stuff was kind of in our wedding vows. It's like, I feel like she made me the best version of myself and like pushed me and believed in me in a way that even I didn't necessarily believe in myself and was like, no, like wanted me to go off and do the things I wanted to do. It was pretty great.
Devin okay, and I are we're frozen shaking. And we're Devin's going to cry and my jaw hit the floor and cracked the veneer of my glossy wood flooring, not to brag.
I did think you were frozen when I stopped talking and I looked at it. Your mouth was just hanging open. I was like, oh, I guess that's it.
Well,
yeah.
I love... No, that's just how I look. I just have a loose jaw.
She was the ringed, meaning she was one of the people who watched the tape and now her face is stuck looking.
I'm going to crawl through like the screen at both of you in 5 seconds. I love that. I think that that's a few things that I like about that. One of which is that I feel like there's a lot of an old narrative that women shouldn't be the ones pursuing guys. But on multiple occasions, I've been the person who's been more, for lack of a better word, like aggressive. And that's always kind of worked out for me. Not when I'm pursuing a guy who's like obviously uninterested, because then it's just like leading to like a self-esteem crash. But more so when I just really want to get to know someone. I don't know. This is all to say that I hate the like, don't text first. Wait 2 hours after he texts. Like,
I'm all in favor of that. And I think I had this conversation with a really good friend of mine who is single. I'm not sure if she's still single, but she was talking about the idea of having trouble meeting people and all that. And I was like, why don't you just pursue somebody? Or if there's somebody that you have a crush on or whatever, you see them at a bar, like go talk to them. And she was adamant, like, no, they need to approach me. Like very much was about that. And in my mind, like, I was like, then you only will meet the type of guys who would actively pursue someone. Like you're eliminating any, because I am certainly, if my wife hadn't done that, like, I don't know that we would have gotten together, because it's just not my default to like go actively pursue people in those things. I just assume that I'm like, well, I would know if they liked me. Like that was sort of my default setting. And I feel like it ultimately worked out great, but I'm all in favor of it. And I'm all in favor of, I just like to, I was like, oh, they like me. I never would have assumed that. And when you know that, I feel like it's very helpful. And it kind of flips on its head that thing of like, men should be pursue women. And like, that's not, it was never my, I never liked doing that. And so it was great. Like it worked out great for me, but I'm glad to hear it worked out well for you too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely single and recently dumped, but it did work out for me on some occasions. Kind of doubling back on what you said about your career and how objectively you have reached this level of success that 0.0001 of writers ever even get to. And how much of that do you think had to do with having a partner who really had your back? And what does that look like practically?
Well, I think absolutely it's, and sorry, you, not to.
No, you're
question,
a man.
But...
I'm a woman. I get it. I should shut the fuck up.
No.
The Astoria Ken is coming back out.
I know the drone is taking my picture as we speak. He Ken steps in it again. Cover of page 6 tomorrow.
And he emailed us saying he loves his wife. It's so weird.
I think we were just sort of excited about the prospect of it together. The example I'll give is like, obviously, like getting hired at The Daily Show and everything was like so exciting and life-changing. But I still remember it was like Christmas in 2010, I want to say. And I had gone from being like an intern at The Onion to being like a post-production supervisor or something. And like, but just doing like basic video editing type stuff. And then eventually I worked on the Comedy Central show and we watched a cut of some sketch called like The Toad, where they had like this giant toad creature in a cage that would predict like college football sports and it was, or scores. And it was very stupid, but I remember watching it in the edit with like the executive producer and a couple of the writers. And we were just looking at, it was like a graphics pass. And my wife and I went out for our like Christmas dinner, give each other our gifts before we would like go off to our separate families, which we would do back when we were still just dating. And I went from like that day at work to the dinner, and it felt unbelievable to me, the idea of like, I just saw the thing, like I was in the room making the show with these people, and it felt like impossibly big. And no matter what's happened since then, nothing feels as big and exciting as that. And she was always right there, like so excited and motivated by like just happy to be on that like journey together, especially knowing where we both started. And she's also like risen through the ranks at in her career and you know, is now like the chief of staff for the department where we both worked. And it's just been wonderful. Like she just always had really high expectations. And when those things started happening, we just celebrated together. And it was always nice when those things were tied to like life milestones. Mm. Like I remember that Christmas dinner together and just being happy and doing gifts with each other. And the other thing was the week that I had to write the packet to apply to The Daily Show, because I had applied once and didn't get it, but I was sort of in the mix to submit again. And I got the guidelines, and we were supposed to go to her family's house, like to hang out with her family up in Cape Cod. And I was like, well, I have a week to get this thing done. I want to work really hard. And she was like, no, you're doing it. Like, you're not, no, there's nothing getting, like, she would always push to make sure I was doing the thing. Or if I'd be like, I don't know, I don't want to submit. She's like, no, you're going to submit it. What are you talking about? Like, it was, everything was always like, you have to do this. Obviously you have to do this. And so it was never a question of like, babe, do you mind if I, she's right. Would just like push me in the direction of doing those things. And then even when we were up there, like, she's like, okay, like just stay and work during the day. And then we'll all go to dinner together. We would go like kayaking in the morning, and then she'd go out with her family and I'd sit in and just try to write a sketch that I thought would be funny and bang my head against the table for 3 hours and then hopefully end up with something good.
They were all, yeah, big toad sketches.
Oh, I just stole the toad predicting sports scores, and The Daily Show was like, yes, this is what we need.
They were like, okay, first of all, he started at the Madoff company. Second of all, he wrote the toad sketches.
Bernie actually stole the sketch from one of his clients.
Okay, guys, RIP Bernie. Don't act like this king is not recently resting in paradise. Like, we have to mention that. No, but I love that story so much. And I just feel relief hearing you talk about it, because I know that feeling of like wondering if you're going to have to do the like, I'm sorry, but is this okay? Sorry. And then realizing you don't have to is so relieving, having been personally in relationships where like that was a thing where I was like, so like, I hope this is okay, but, and the person was like, not really, or whatever. And to be in a relationship now,
instead of it being, we're going kayaking in the morning, it's like, we're going kayaking in the morning.
No, but yeah, it, like, being in a relationship now with someone who does fully support my career is like, oh my God, it's such relief. Especially because when you're doing something creative, you have to like really hustle sometimes. I know that's like the dumbest like neon sign in a blonde girl from a sorority's room word, hustle, but it's true. Like, you have to like make that bank, and you have to like be a girl boss. So it's like, you have to be with someone who's willing to support that.
I find that it helps to really genuinely want the other person to be happy and to support that. Like, that's so helpful. And I think also maybe, and it might have been an issue that I had too, but I was in the relationships I had had before were with people I had met at like NYU who were also in like the theater program, and then also, and I feel like there's sort of a, you can't help but have a sense of competition a little bit, and I don't, and you're kind of measuring yourself against everyone else in your life, let alone like the person that you're with and that you care about. So I think that we didn't have any of that. It was just sort of like, no, we're doing this, like we are partners in life and we're working together in both our careers. And yeah, I mean, it's, and I hope that that was never a problem in the other relationships in the way that I acted or anything like that. Maybe it's just the way it happens, but you know, and maybe it wouldn't happen now if I was, you know, if my wife was in some sort of like creative career, but it's hard to say, but it's just not an issue. And that's wonderful because I can remember what it was like and how difficult it was to navigate and not wanting to feel that way. And, but it was also like, I do remember those days where it was just like, oh, like the person I was with was like thriving and doing really well and you're proud. But, you know, it's, I think any sort of tier of success that you have just becomes difficult by nature. And I feel like you see it in those Hollywood romances all the time, you know, it's like, somebody wins an Oscar and you see their spouse in the audience
drunk.
And you're just like, can they make it? I just, you know, it all goes back to A Star Is Born. Like, you just don't want to be
so
the person
true.
Who peed themselves on the stage while you're accepting your award. That's all creative relationships in some instances. No,
I remember seeing Reese Witherspoon was winning a Golden Globe for Walk the Line. Amazing movie. Hot, hot, hot movie. And she looks adorable. Everyone knows she's going to win. She gets called up to win. Ryan Phillippe, #toxic, is his tuxedo is like his bow tie is already untied. He
Ew.
Like slaps her ass so hard as she's, you can look it up on Google. It's crazy. As she's going up to the stage. It's so weird and so obvious that he's like struggling with the fact that his, you know, wife is basically going to win an Oscar and has all these accolades, and he's just sitting there with, you know, a shitty cross tattoo on his body.
Can I tell you, that's exactly the relationship I had in my head when I brought that up. That's exactly the image. It was Reese Witherspoon and the cutaway
was
to Ryan
really?
Phillippe. It's exactly the thing I was picturing. Yes, that was it. And then I was like, well, A Star Is Born is at least fictional people. I'm not putting anyone's feelings on the line, but that's what I was picturing.
As
so.
One of our listeners, I hope he's not too offended, but yes.
You're very intuitive.
I told you.
Yeah. I was thinking about when Lady Gaga, as I often reference, was performing at the Super Bowl and her fiance, who was an actor from Chicago Fire, broke up with her because he was threatened by her success. Anyone else? Raise your virtual hands.
Raise your virtual hands. Well, something that I talk a lot about on the pod is basically that why I think it's so important to talk about relationships and what makes a healthy relationship and how to get out of an unhealthy relationship is because it's almost more about the other areas of your life. Like you
right.
said, like, I need someone who encourages me to take the time away to write the packet. I can't worry about someone feeling validated and that taking away from my own time on myself. Because I think, I mean, especially for women, we can very easily get caught up into our relationship being the starring role of our lives rather than a sort of home that supports our other endeavors. And mm-hmm. I think it's so important to have that home base to go back to sort of someone with either good news or just exhaustion from bad news or mm-hmm. any of that.
And it's a two-way street too. Like when our son was born back in the 2018, we went on a snowboarding trip with a bunch of friends of ours in December because we wanted to hang out and, you know, have like keep sort of grow our family life and hang out with our friends, and our friends had kids and stuff. So my wife is a very like avid snowboarder, has been snowboarding like most of her life, loves it. And so when we went to the mountain, she was like, she was still feeding at that point, and we were trying to figure out how it would all go. And the house was a little drive away from the mountain. So I was like, just go snowboard. I will keep our like 3 month old in his little car seat, rock him. And I was just in the lodge of this mountain, and no one else was there. I was just sort of sitting there. And because he was like napping off and on, I had my iPhone. And because like the first 3 months of parenthood are so crazy, I hadn't had a chance to watch the Bruce Springsteen Broadway show, which I didn't get to see live. One of my #life regrets. So I watched it. I was watching it on my phone and I was like, go snowboard, snowboard the whole day, whatever. When you need to feed, like, come down and just like grab him, take care of him. And then like, I'll keep a table so we can all have lunch together, whatever. But like, I don't have to be at the house, whatever. Cool. So I'm sitting there watching this Bruce Springsteen Broadway show, three month old in my arms, just like trying to rock him to sleep.
Beauty.
And there's a Beach Boys cover band warming up in the background. And I'm watching the Springsteen thing with like one ear pod in, and Bruce Springsteen is like talking about like playing my hometown. He's like, my father drove me around and was showing me around the town and the plant that had closed and said, son, this is your hometown. And I am there in this empty ski lodge, weeping, just openly weeping with my son in my arms as a Beach Boys cover band is sound checking.
Playing like
just like
girl.
Way down in Kokomo.
No.
It's like an emotional, exhausted wreck holding our son. But it was great. It's like one of my favorite memories of when he was little. But, you know, that thing wouldn't have happened if I wasn't just like, yeah, man, go snowboard, be happy. Like, I think it's another thing that's great in relationships like that. Like, when someone genuinely wants you to be happy, you then genuinely want them to be happy. It's like, no, go, like, do the thing you want to do. It'll be, you know, we'll all be happier for it. And but yeah, so whenever we have those opportunities, it's hard because we haven't been able to snowboard because of the pandemic, but hopefully again soon.
Okay, before we get to your kids, which I want to talk about, and it was one of the reasons we wanted to have you on the pod, is talk about parenthood and relationships. I quickly want to know when you decided that you wanted to propose to Jen, and when you guys decided, probably together to some extent, that you wanted to get married rather than just be together.
Yeah, we lived together for a while. We moved in when we had been together for like 2 years, but we were never in a rush to get married. And I feel like the best description of what marriage felt like was on like some Slate podcast that I listened to for work, where they talked about cornerstone versus capstone. And I feel like our generation, my generation, I won't lump myself in being older, but we view marriage more as like the end of the journey than the beginning, where like it used to be like, well, I'm out of college and I'm 19 years old and I'm gonna get married and then we're gonna go on our life. But now, just given like the economics of like having a wedding, buying a house, all that type of thing, like having children, it's more like, well, okay, I feel like I'm established enough in my career. Now I'm ready to like get married, settle down, start that part. Now that I feel like I have my feet under me, because everything is so expensive in American life now. And I think that was kind of the trajectory we were on. And so we had lived together for a long time and we had kind of kicked it around and we were like, well, do we want to have kids? Do we not? Or do we want to just like work really hard and then retire to an island or a mountain and just like ski or snowboard or surf or whatever, you know, into our, you know, golden years. But we decided we did want to have kids. And so then it was more like what would be the right way to propose? And so I had sort of figured out what would be the right way to do it, where we had sort of gotten together on the roof of my old apartment building. And I still had access to it. And I figured this out. Our anniversary was in like, I want to say it was June, like late June. And I had figured this out like maybe like August or September earlier. I'm like, oh, I'm going to propose on our anniversary on the roof. Like, got it. I know what I'm going to do and where I'm going to do it. But then I had to wait the whole, that whole year for the right moment to happen. And so I then wanted to go get a ring from this thrift shop that she goes to, that a friend of hers from high school owned in her hometown. And she has all like vintage jewelry and stuff. And I was like, I'll go get the ring there because that person knows her taste. And I know she likes stuff from there. And I'm like, it'll be personal and all that type of thing. So then day comes around, her sister and her sister's husband were staying with us at the time, and it was our anniversary. So we had our anniversary dinner, and I was like, oh, let's go up to the roof, whatever. And her sister was like, he's gonna propose tonight because it's your anniversary. And she actually said to her sister on the day, no, he's not proposing to me tonight. If he was gonna propose, I would know about it because he is not that smooth. And so then that night we were up on that roof together and, like, you know, remembering all the years together. And then I got down on one knee and gave her the ring. And then she told me that story afterwards. And I was like, not only did it go great and she said yes, but I found out after the fact from her sister that she didn't know it was coming and didn't think I was capable of it.
So I love that too.
Proud of it. Yeah, and then we did like an engagement shoot up there after the fact and stuff. Oh, and we had like champagne up there, and it was just, it was really wonderful and special. But we had been together for 8 years at that point, and so it was, wow, we were together for a very long time, but, you know, it just...
That's kind of more special in a way,
great,
though.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I understand both ways. I really do. But for me, I like the idea of it being a celebration rather than what you were saying, like a big, like a hope, like fingers crossed, I think you're the one.
Yeah. 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 No, I can't imagine that. There were certainly no surprises between the two of us by the time we got engaged and we're going to get married.
Was your first dance song No Surprises by Radiohead?
No, no, no. Wait, it would definitely never be. Our first dance song. Oh, we danced to this song that's by a band called The Ink Spots. It's a song called I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire. And it's, the lyrics of it are like, I don't want to set the world on fire, I just want to start a flame in your heart. And it's from, she had been playing this game called Fallout 3 at the time. And it was a song that played all the time. And that was a game that she loved. And it was a song that was, it just felt like the right place in our life. Because she's like a super punk rocker and kind of had always been like, goes in mosh pits and stuff like that. And I'm like, cool, babe, I'll be back by the bar.
She's so much cooler than us. Have fun.
She's so much cooler than me. That helps. But so it sort of made sense within our relationship too. And then our coworker, formerly mutual coworker, Daniel Radosh, knows that game very well and knows that Jen loves that game. And as soon as our first dance ended, we kind of went over to our table and Radosh like beamed, like just made a beeline up to me and was like, was that from Fallout 3? And we're like, yes. Like, and so that was like a really wonderful, wonderful moment at our wedding. So, but that was, you know, it's nice too, when you have like 8 years of history, you can just draw from little things in your,
right,
your shared history to put into your wedding. And we love that. And all the songs and dancing and all that type of stuff. It was great. So that was our first dance song.
I was going to interrupt you when you were talking about the proposal story, when you were saying I knew the best way to propose and I was going to be like, flash mob. Perfect way to propose.
Yeah, she just wanted people dancing to Thriller and going, babe, what's this? And then I get down,
what's
on one
happening?
Knee,
babe, wait, what is happening right now?
Yeah. Oh, and I'm dressed like a zombie and then I start doing the dance
and she's like, okay, wait,
and no, it hasn't aged amazingly.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, she's like,
but it's ours,
a little,
babe,
bit offensive, but yeah. Yeah. I'm getting married.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay, so Devin is the giver of life to one of the cutest kids I've ever seen. Although, aww, I think I've only ever seen him in Instagram pictures.
Really?
Did he come into the office when he was young?
He came into the office once, yeah.
He walked in.
Like, yeah. I'm here to take dad's job.
This is the place, huh? And I was like, yeah. No. It's not.
He submitted a packet. And they really liked it. It was not just Toad sketches. It was good.
I maybe do remember him coming through.
I think you may have seen him. I can't remember when it was. When did you leave?
I left in December 2018.
Maybe it was January then.
Okay.
And how old, yeah, is he?
2.5, which everyone talks about terrible twos, and it's challenging. I feel like my parental style is just like, I try to just have as much empathy as I can and like understand what he's going through. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's crazy about 2-year-olds is there's like terrible twos, oh, so many tantrums. But the idea, there's a certain, from somewhere after 1.5, a kid is just, there's a moment where it clicks where it's just like, oh, hey, by the way, here's all your emotions. Good luck. And like, how, right, do you deal with that? Like, what do you do with all, when all of a sudden you're just like, frustrated and happy and sad and like the swings between them. I'm like, that just must be so exhausting. Like, it's, right, hard enough when you've been a person for 37 years, let alone like you're just learning what your emotions are and how to deal with frustration. Oh, and also you can't talk.
Right.
Like,
you don't have any words. You can't even like say how you're feeling about anything. I know.
And you're just finding out that you're another person besides your mom and dad and have to work on distinguishing, yeah, yourself by saying no all the time.
I can't imagine it. And I don't remember what it was like. You can't just be oh, yeah, man, I know what you're going through. Do you?
I should talk to him.
Are a psychic about the past, though.
Wait, okay, so I actually have a question. So you were talking about, like, the beginning, like, having a newborn. I am curious what that is like, because I feel like I just can only imagine it's the most shocking, like, life-altering, but also most exciting phase. And my mom told me, like, a fascinating thing that I'm obsessed with, like, birth and, like, the biology of it. And my mom was telling me that there's a certain point when the baby starts smiling is biologically the point where you're like, this is not worth it. Like, when you're, like, so frustrated and overwhelmed that you're like, I can't do this anymore. And then the baby starts smiling and you're like, oh, my God. Like, this is the best thing ever. So what was your experience like with that? Because I feel like that is something that people don't really talk about besides being like, it's crazy.
I think it was different for me because I was just in from night one, and it was just overwhelming because I was holding him in my arms the first night. And
after you had cigars with your buddies?
No, I didn't do the cigar thing. I didn't do any of it.
All right. I was wasted and I had cigar on my breath.
Hammered.
Looking down at this little kid, guy.
I was like, kid, take a drag. And, and then the nurse escorted me out and it was magical. I remember holding him the first night, and the newborn smell thing is real. We were at the NYU hospital over on First Avenue. And so it was maybe like 20 blocks away from where my wife and I met. And so I was just holding him, like telling him the story of how mommy and daddy met, which is a surreal thing to do because you're like, okay, there's a third person in the room now. And I'm going to get you up to speed on like the history of the family. And so I was holding him, telling him like, okay, well, mommy and daddy met at work and it was about 30 blocks up. A block is like how we measure a street. A street is this thing that cars drive on. Cars are these things that we get away.
You're like, anyway, so Henry Ford in 19...
Yeah, we met at work. Work is this thing you arbitrarily have to do to earn money. Money is this pretend paper that we all agree has value. And I was just like, he needs to learn everything. He knew literally, he brought nothing to the conversation, but he had no frame of reference for anything. And like the totality of it all just hit me of like, he needs to learn everything. This is night one of his life. And it was just so, it was daunting, but also beautiful of just like, this is a completely like clean slate person starting. And holding him is just so wonderful. And anytime we would be around older parents whose kids were all grown up, like we went down to my mom's place for Thanksgiving and we have some really good friends down around there. And they'd be like, let me hold the baby. Can I hold the baby? It's like, of course. And I would see them and they would just know how to do it and be like smelling the top of his head with like the still kind of like newborn smell. And I get that now that he's older because you only get that so many times in your life, like one, you know, however many kids you have. And once it's gone, it's gone. Your kids are grown up. And I could just see that look in other parent, like older parents who are like just getting a little taste of it again, holding the kid, of understanding like it's so finite. And then once it's gone, it's gone. And they just like, they just have like, just give me a little hit of that baby's head. Yeah, let me like, it's like, you just need a fix of newborn. So I've always tried to like hang on to that, especially like throughout all the stages, because every stage is finite in its own way. So
yeah.
So yeah, that was like newborn stage. And then the other thing, like, I feel like I had an easier time in the beginning because one, I'm a man, so easier. And then number two, I worked for 4 years at a morning show. So I literally, not the morning show, like the Apple TV, the morning show, but there are parts of that that speak to me. No, it was at VH1. So trust me, you and nobody ever saw it.
What?
Yeah, it was very.
They might have. Don't say that.
It was called Big Morning Buzz. So I don't know if you.
Sure.
Yeah. Was that before or after Flavor of Love, Rock of Love, and Tila Tequila's Shot of Love?
After. It was much further after than it should have been. Okay. VH1, I don't think it even had any programming at that point, except for us and like Love and Hip Hop and Love and Hip Hop Atlanta.
Right.
Those were, yeah. Literally, we had a meeting at the show that was like, A lot of our viewers are people who turned off the TV at night after Love & Hip Hop Atlanta and just turned it on again in the morning. So how can we appeal to those people? I was like, I don't know.
Oh my God.
But I had worked at that morning show for 4 years. So I had the thing of like the alarm going off at 3:30 in the morning, right, and then having to be in the office at 5 o'clock. So I knew what it was like to just be like, exhausted.
Always
to the point
tired,
where you felt,
yeah,
like you had, yeah, and you feel like you have a concussion just, yeah, at all moments of your life. Like everything is blurry. My eye would just twitch.
Yeah.
I mm-hmm. just had like, it would just be doing its little like tap dance on the side of my face. And so after having done that for so long, when you have a kid, you're like, well, I love this person and right, I love my wife. So no one at the morning show did I love.
Right.
Some of them were fine. Some of them were a huge pain in the ass. But it's, there was no emotional stakes in it that way, other than like, this is a job that I enjoy doing. But I feel like I knew how to function that tired. So it wasn't the most tired I had ever been in my life dealing with a newborn. So I at least had some like toolkit to right, handle it. So that made it a little bit easier. Yeah. And then, you know, once you get through it, like you start getting those glimmers of personality and stuff.
That's what I was going to ask, is what is your son's personality like?
Oh, it's great. So it's really switched on lately because he decided 2 weeks ago, he was like, I want to wear two different shoes to daycare. So I'm going to wear a black shoe and I'm going to wear a brown shoe. And then he rolled into school and he, when he did the drop off, he just like looked at his teacher and was like, huh? Huh? Two different shoes. What do you think? And it was like his first little bit of like real self-expression with what he was wearing. And I was so like proud of him. It's like, no, man, go do it. Show people, do your thing. And now he'll get a little fussy if we don't. When we're going walking to drop off, like he'll have a flower and he'll just want, he'll be like, flower, flower. And I'll get like a little petal off a tree and he'll just want to walk into school holding a little flower between his thumb and forefinger,
no,
and like hand it to one of his friends.
No.
It's so sweet.
I can't even accept that. That yeah, is so cute.
I'm devastating the local environment every morning, but it's worth it because there's just barren trees like a German fairy tale.
The drone yeah, drops down and takes a picture. It's like Ken Jr. doesn't give a fuck about environment. No, that's so cute. I love that. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more from our guest, Devin Delaquanti. I want you. Welcome back to True Romance. I love like looking back at Friends baby pictures, like when Friends post their like TBT baby pictures and you can see their personality like starting all the way at the beginning.
Yeah.
That's so cute.
It's fun. It's cool watching his personality come in. It's, yeah. And he's like, he likes to laugh and play hide and seek and he'll tell me to go hide and then I will. But then he'll be like, hide on the couch. I'm like, okay. And then I like put a blanket over myself. And then he'll be like, found you, Papa. And then... And then when I'll hide somewhere like legitimately and he'll be looking around and he'll just like, be going like, Papa, Papa, like, Papa, where are you? And I'm like, that's not the point of hide and seek. Like, you have to find me. You can't, and I can't just be like, hey, here I am, you know, but
well,
it's super fun.
You have to teach him how to win and lose because he'll never make it like you did in a world of Madoffs if you don't.
Oh, stop
teach
it.
That.
He's already funnier than I will ever be.
Devin told me that you understand dad jokes now.
Oh, I understood dad jokes like way before. Like I appreciated them always. Yeah. No, they're bad.
I was thinking specifically
delightful.
Of a time when one of our coworkers previously mentioned, because can't go without mentioning Radosh.
Daniel Radosh.
Yeah, he's like a dad of three. Does he have three kids? Two kids mm-hmm. or three kids?
He had twins and then a third, I think.
Okay. So he has many kids and he made like kind of a dad joke in the meeting. And Devin had just come back from paternity leave and he was like the only person who laughed. And he's like, oh, I get it now. It's so funny.
And what are some unexpected things that you didn't expect to...
expect when you were expecting?
What didn't you expect when you were expecting? And what are some of the
now that's a book
surprises?
Title.
What do you think about, okay, so like, does Knocked Up hold up to what pregnancy and raising a kid is actually like? That's what I want to know.
Well, my favorite thing about Knocked Up is it's just three funny scenes over and over again. It's like, here's a funny scene in a doctor's office. Here's a funny scene where the guy who shouldn't be dating Katherine Heigl is dating Katherine Heigl. And then here's a scene of a bunch of stone bros making fun of each other. And it's like those three scenes in just a sort of sequential. So I don't have the stoned buddies making fun of me thing.
What? You got to get that.
I do. No, I need friends who will just rip on me, I guess. But
we'll put a Craigslist ad out.
That sounds good.
Okay.
Just put a picture of my face and be like, want to make fun of this face? And then you'll just get a flood in your inbox of people that are like, let me at him.
Great.
Oh, yeah, Knocked Up, I guess, is relatively accurate. I don't know. I never was like, hey, doctor with a German accent, you sound like a diehard terrorist. That seems like a thing you wouldn't want to say to your doctor, but it's great in a comedy.
What about, okay, so Baby Geniuses. First Baby Geniuses and then Baby's Day Out. How do they hold up? No, I'm kidding.
Honey, I Blew Up the Kids. How does that?
Okay, how does Honey, I Blew Up the Kids relate to your experience?
I think I've only seen Shrunk the Kids. I don't know if I've ever seen Blew Up the Kids.
Blew Up the Kid was good, I think, but I was a kid at the time, so I had no reference. Okay, so what were your biggest fears about parenthood, and did they come true? And if so, what did you do? If so, did you fight or flight your fears?
Yeah, flight. Always flight. That's my default.
Okay.
I think that I was afraid that it would change my... Oh, I'll put it this way. This is like the perfect example of how it's changed. I was worried that I would lose kind of my drive or motivation or like the ability. Like I used to just work like...
Yeah.
I enjoyed working late at night. It was just where I felt like I did my best work. And
right.
And I was worried, like, well, I'm not going to be able to do that now. Like, things are different. But, and that I wouldn't be able to pursue the things I wanted to pursue. And, like, absolutely, you still can. Like, once you see that, like, oh, so many people do it, you can try to figure out a way to do it. And it's what you want it to be. But the example I'll give of how things have changed is my wife and I recently watched the Billie Eilish documentary. I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't. Is it good?
It's terrific.
Okay.
We stan. She's phenomenal. So watching that documentary, I don't know how much you know about her, but I think she was homeschooled and she makes the music with her brother,
mm-hmm.
but both her parents are like a really important part of her like team essentially. And like were musicians or something like that. And watching the documentary, I feel like years past, I would be like, she's such an incredible artist. I want to be an artist like her. Like I want to be able to like be brave and you know, express myself in honest ways the way she does and be vulnerable, but also like be exciting and push new boundaries. And now watching that documentary, I was just like, Billie Eilish's parents are so cool. They are so supportive and give her the freedom to be the creative genius that she is. And they don't stand in her way. And I'm like, I want to grow up to be Billie Eilish's dad. And so it's sort of, but I see the value in that now. And I was always fortunate that my parents were always cool. They were like, oh, you want to go to art school? Like, yeah, do whatever. Like, yeah, go ahead, do it. Like, you know, and we were fortunate enough that I was in that position. And yeah, and I value that now of I want to just be able to both pursue the things I want to pursue, but like set it up for other people. And that's also part of being a creative person and a collaborator as well, is like you have to give other people the ability to shine. And I think it's part of being a writer as well, is like you got to tee people up to be successful and give them what they need. And even if Trevor, whoever, like you're always collaborating in some sense. And so I feel like it's parenting is kind of that, like you have to learn how to be a good collaborator and work in a group. And so my fears about not being able to work the way I wanted to work, I just had to adapt to it and view it that way and like adjust the way that I was working to be like the dad I need to be and stuff. And then, of course, like the pandemic changes that whole thing, too, because like we had to adapt our schedule and everyone in the world is adapting to that. And so it was just finding ways to make sure like we were keeping everyone in our house safe. And then also like making sure my wife could work the way she needs to work. And then I could work the way I need to work. And, you know, that was a crash course into and all that too.
Yeah. What was that like?
It was really hard in the beginning. And my wife's work starts a lot earlier than mine. She has to be on call sometimes like 8 a.m, get up, like immediately on like international calls and dealing with stuff. So then our workday usually starts when we start getting writing assignment gangs and things coming in. And those don't start until like 10 usually at this point. So there were 2 hours where it was just like, cool, I'm going to get him out of the house. We're going to go see every playground in the neighborhood. Aww. We're going to walk around to the park. We're going to go kick a soccer ball and like go dance with your friends and like everything that we could do, you know, socially distanced and all that type of thing. But it was really hard. Like the playgrounds weren't open.
Right.
We were just going to parks, bringing a blanket, bringing bubbles, like Aww. Soccer ball and all that type of thing and running around and trying to learn to scooter. Like, and I think that it was really hard. And, you know, we just like, we had to do screen time at a certain point. The thing that was really our saving grace was he still naps, and he naps like in the afternoon. Like everything in your life kind of revolves around the nap schedule no matter what. So the fact that like he was able to nap for 2 hours in the middle of the day, like literally he's napping right now. I was like, 2 o'clock, let's do it. So you kind of plan your life around that. And so that was we were able to work. And that was when I could really like put my head down and get a lot of the work that I needed to get done. And my wife, same thing. And then, you know, we would cobble together walks, or, you know, if I would take him out or my wife would take him out, we would play in his room. But it was a lot of sort of figuring that schedule out. And then once things got a little better and the playgrounds opened up, then he was like making friends and, you know, seeing people at the playground and socializing more. And that was great. And at every point, we were just like as fortunate as you could be in this situation, because we were both able to still work.
Right.
And our schedules were, we were able to keep it together where we didn't, like someone could be with him at all times reasonably. And a lot of the time it was me, just because my wife is like, has to be in front of the computer doing spreadsheets and on calls, but I could at least like get him out some of the time during the day. So whenever we could do that, we would do that. And, but it's again, it's like that thing where it's like, this is my wife's job. That's what she needs to be doing. Like, we got to roll with it.
Right.
And so that's what we did. And anytime that it was hard, I tried to do like, it goes back to the thing with the parents that our friends who are holding him, who are the older parents. It's what I call like the rocking chair test, is I try to picture my life with me as like a super old person sitting in a rocking chair and thinking back to like, he's 2 years old. He's a little kid. He'll like laugh and play and run. And I have to be home with him. Like, I can't go into the office.
Right.
And I just like, I am going to ideally one day be 80 years old, sitting in a rocking chair, thinking back to these years.
Right.
And like, longing to be that again, like wanting these moments back, as long as everything goes smoothly and we keep everybody safe. And so I always tried to have that perspective of like, just like cherish, no matter how hard it is, like try to view it from that point of view, because you're in it now. So appreciate it while you're in it. And like, that's the thing that like really got me through it during the tough times.
I love that so much. And also, even though I know this isn't about me and I know I can't relate, because all
take
I've ever had is a
him,
dog
Dev.
That I
take
gave
from him
to my parents to take care of.
Reclaim it like the name Devin. Take it.
But I have to say that that is so helpful for me to hear right now. Like, I think it's been one of the biggest struggles for me to have that perspective and to like enjoy this part of my life instead of everything being like, oh, now this is happening. And like, I don't know if I'm going to get this job and I don't know if it's going to work out and whatever. And it is so helpful to think about, like, there'll be a time when I look back and think that, you know, it was fun when I was starting out at the Madoff company. And even though I died, it was, you know, that was stressful, but that was a part of the grind. And I was a girl boss and I was going to be a Wizard of Lies.
When I'm in white collar prison, I'm going to want to remember these times well.
Yeah, longingly looking down at my ankle bracelet, thinking of the better times.
I think that we all have, whether we'd like to or not, this idea that, and then life will begin. So once right. I get my WGA yeah. award nomination, like then my life will really begin. And that's when I'll be living life. And right now I'm in the waiting room, and we forget that the days are God's, you know, like these are
yeah.
the most important things ever. And that
we forget that Jesus is Savior and that
and he walks among us, and thank
he
God.
He does walk among us. And Ace Ventura walks among us.
So this next hour is going to be about Christ in our lives. I hope you're ready. I hope your son's napping still.
Yeah. You know what? It's funny you bring that up, because I grew up and I went to Catholic school, and I so vividly remember when I was in second grade, my second grade teacher said, you have to love Jesus. And I, on a podcast called True Romance, I was like, what does that mean? I don't know what that means, and I don't know that I love Jesus the way I should.
Right.
And I feel like there's something wrong with me, and it just like puts you in your head so much, and you're like, why don't I have that? And I, like, I understand him now as like a philosophical figure, that type of thing. But I was just like, oh my God, second grade Devin, you need to love Jesus. Why don't you love Jesus enough? And right. then
you're like, I love food. I love food.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But what about candy? Yeah.
But then when my son was born, that was just like, oh, instant love. Like right. it was crazy. And I don't know if it's like a biological evolution thing, but I was just like, something clicked and it felt like the bartender was like, oh, we got this other kind of love we keep behind the bar. Yeah. Here, you should try this. And I was just like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. Because yeah, I just didn't, I feel like I was in my head about it for so many years of like questioning, much like Will Ferrell and Chris Kattan. I was wondering, what is love? And doing that silly dance.
One of my favorite movies that I would watch on VHS over and over and over again in the span of an afternoon. I wanted to end on the question of how, yeah, this heady kind of love has affected your marriage. Obviously, people get really worried about having kids and that it's really hard to suddenly co-parent when the stakes are so high, regardless of how good things were before, but also it famously can bring to get people together even closer. So what has your experience been with Jen?
You know, there were, when you're both really tired and there's sleepless nights, I feel like you're bound to just be at each other's throats sometimes. Maybe not. Like maybe there are people who can just be float gracefully through it the whole time. But in general, I feel like it's like anything in a relationship. You have to figure out what your strengths are and what their strengths are and how you're compatible and then kind of roll with that. I feel like I'm so kind of goofy. And if he's throwing a tantrum, like I'll just be like, hey man, what's going on? Like I'll talk to him the way I talk to anybody without just try to like almost confuse him out of not having being fussy. Or you're like, oh, you want to have a cookie? Well, why do you want to have a cookie? Oh, yeah, they're delicious. It's like, you know, I mean, yeah, cookies are delicious. Apples are delicious. I have a couple apples. Like, do you want to have an apple right now? Like,
I'm going to do this with Devin.
Yeah. Yeah. That is what Carolina does with me.
Yeah. But my wife is really good at like helping him learn independence and like learn how to play on his own and how to like give him the strength that he needs, where I'm just like a big mush. And I feel like he'll just not be good at anything with any level of independence if I'm around. And so I feel like we kind of navigate that well together. And it's hard. Like, it's sort of the way you treat each other is then how you treat the kid. And so mm-hmm. then you have to navigate your own nuances that way too. So I think it's just always changing and evolving.
I love that. How you treat each other is how you treat the kid.
Yeah.
I think that's really profound. It reminds me of a couple of things. One, that there's research that shows that if you ever talk to your kid about your annoyances with the other parent, so when you're talking to your two-year-old and you're like, Jen's really pissing me off, which you're obviously apt to do.
You probably do that all the time.
Yeah. I guess that there's
I would
some
never.
Study that says that it's worse emotionally on a child than even directly telling them, like, you're pissing me off. Isn't that weird? It affects your child even more.
Yeah, but you're teaching them to not only like be negative, but also to vent your negativity about another person to someone else and not confront the issues directly.
Yeah.
And you're also kind of creating that dynamic in the family where you're a little unit against somebody else. And
right.
then undoubtedly, like, it'll happen the other way too. And so then, you know, you're this weird kind of set of alliances in the house. And yeah, I can see how that wouldn't be great. And that's something that, like, I had very open relationships with my parents, and my parents split up after I left for college. And so I had, you know, very independent relationships with each of them, and they still have like a good relationship with each other. But my wife's family is still like this big family unit. And my wife is just like, no, you never talk like that. My parents would never talk to me about each other. And I was just like, what do you mean?
I know.
How is that possible? And you just don't have a frame of reference for that a lot of the time. And I certainly didn't. And I think once you see the different ways of doing it, you're like, well, you just kind of have to decide how you want to do it. And then also, like, my parents made decisions where they were like, oh, I was an only child. So they just were like, oh, we're going to take you everywhere. They took me to like Japanese restaurants when I was little, and go to like a Rolling Stones concert, and then go to this like election night party, and like stand behind the bar with our friend. And it was just, you know, I was always kind of like tagging along to everything. Yeah. And I loved it.
There's so many pictures of me like asleep at parties.
Yeah.
Or like stumbling home from like a 2 a.m. party with my mom holding my hand, wasted. Yeah.
Well, you couldn't hold your liquor back then.
Yeah, it was too small. Yeah.
I was just small.
I was too small for
Jager bombs.
Yeah, I also think about what's affected. I think what helps me a lot in relationships or has is that my mom took like a parenting class when I was really little. And one of the parenting teachers said, like, you have to be careful about how you let your kids speak to you, because how you let them speak to you is how they're going to let other people speak to them. So basically, like, I could swear and stuff, but I could never. And when I hear people tell their parents to shut up, I'm like, what the fuck is happening? Like,
yeah.
It's so crazy to me. And my parents were super liberal and kind of like hippie dippies, but like, we could never be rude to them. And I had a boyfriend once who like casually was like, shut up, when I was like talking about something. And I was like, oh, you can't say that to me. Like, there's no world where you can talk to me like that. And it was only because I was like very taught very seriously at an early age. Like, oh, you can't be rude to me and you can't be rude. You know, like, it was just so simple.
Right.
The weird thing is my parents always told me I couldn't whine, and yet I whine all the time still. I'm literally thinking that right now. I'm like, wait, I actually whine all the time. And also my parents would say that I can't fake cry. And do I fake cry from time to time? Yeah.
You do the baby thing where you try to cry because you want.
Like, I go like.
It is fun watching a kid do that now, because I'm just like, you are totally pretending.
I remember my parents being like, okay, Devin, or like they would always do this thing when they knew I was fake crying, where they would go like, try not to laugh. Okay, try not to smile.
Oh my God, the worst. And you get
so angry.
And
I would be like, you, the injustice that you are like putting against me. Like, I'm trying to like cry at you because this is not fair that I don't get to have a Drake's coffee cake right now before dinner. No, but like, I remember being like, what are they talking about? Like, this is not obvious. And then now that I've seen as an adult kids fake crying, I'm like, oh yeah, it is the most obvious thing you've ever seen.
Dry eyes.
I know.
It's like, very funny.
But yeah.
When my son does it, I'll just be like, calm down, Ryan Phillippe. We all see what you're trying to do.
Okay, so you're mad that you didn't win the Oscar. Okay, so this is what you're going to do? Very much.
Maybe you're mad that you're in Montana Sky or whatever the fuck, and your wife is in Big Little Lies.
And you look a mess.
You look a mess.
I had a babysitter who used to say, oh, crying like a baby.
Why?
Oh, when I was a little kid. It was a joke. It was a bit. Like, very mature.
Carolina, don't casually bring up trauma and then move past it. Okay?
Yeah, let's delve deeper.
On our next hour, Devin, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure.
I have learned so much from this.
Oh, stop it.
I can't believe you were just a wealth of knowledge like down the office hallway from me, and I just never asked you about anything in your life besides, is your script done?
The Devins should have been paging the Devins. That's the irony of all this.
Wow, full circle. Yeah.
We were so worried about other people getting in touch. We never decided to check in with each other, you know.
How can people follow you?
Yeah, and do you have any shows coming up that you want to plug?
Just The Daily Show. I think by the time this comes out, the Jordan Klepper thing will have aired. It's The Daily Show with Trevor Noah presents Jordan Klepper Fingers the Pulse into the MAGAverse, which is going to be really fun. I think people are going to like it. Sort of closes the book on the Trump rallies until they start again in 2023 and take over our lives again.
No. My mom's psychic say we're going to be okay.
Okay.
What has she gotten right otherwise, though?
I want to tell you a lot. Like, okay. I'm saying new Kamala was going to be the VP.
Two words, Pearl Harbor. Okay.
Yeah. What was your mom psychic saying in January of 2020?
This year she said that Pearl Harbor did happen. So.
Okay. Wow. She's been watching a lot of Clint Eastwood.
So yeah, watch The Daily Show. Watch that Jordan Klepper special. And I'm on Twitter at DevDell, DevDell. And I'll tweet there sometimes when I feel like it, I guess.
Well, I love your tweets and I love your advice, and I wish I was as cool as your wife, but I never will be. And I am glad that other Devins are representing the Devins well.
Well, you know, we're doing what we can out here to uphold the name, you know?
Yeah. Well, thanks, Devin.
Thank you.
We'll be
delightful.
Right back.
And that was another episode of True Romance. Ladies, there is a Devin out there for you. There is a guy who wants to be a partner and who will accept your support. And until you find that person, Devin and I are holding the hope.
Me, Devin. Me, Devin. Me, Devin, and Carolina.
Me, Devin. You, Carolina.
Devin, me, and Devin, Carolina are both going to hold the throne for you guys, whatever that means.
I love you, Devin.
Okay, love you.
Catch you next week.